Yep. Give me a nod when you're ready. Junior's ready. Stand by.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Bullets and Bourbon. I have my co-host Frank Gao here, and we have a very special guest from the Marine Corps shooting team, Sergeant Peyton Garcia. Now, I met Garcia back whenever he shot his first NCR match in 2021. Solid shooter, impressed everybody. What he even impressed us with even more just outside of his shooting was his character, how humble he was, and how willing to learn and be coached, which is something that we value highly on the Marine Corps shooting team. Another aspect that we saw from him is that he was going out and competing on his own around the NCR area. He'd go up to Thurmont, he'd shoot QSC, he would take the time in order to better himself. But we have him on here. We want to kind of tell his story and, you know, his path to and on the team. And Garcia, if you could take the time, can you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, first off, thank you, Frank, Matt. Thank you for having me on the on your guys' podcast. Pretty cool experience. I'm Peyton. I'm from Kansas. Born and raised, and then kind of fell into the normal like Marine Corps thing to where I wanted to come out to the Marine Corps. Are we live?
No.
No? Okay. No. I'm really talking about myself, man.
But this, the, you saying this and asking that, that's staying on.
I'm real bad about talking about myself.
Do it. Nobody's going to do it for you. One thing I learned whenever I was going, getting out of the Marine Corps is nobody's going to tell your story like you are.
Yeah.
So let's tell us about yourself.
Well, yeah, I'm Peyton. I'm from Kansas. just a dude who came out of nowhere from the Midwest. Had no real ambitions until I saw that I was suckered into the Marine Corps from those commercials, and then I ended up coming out. Oh my God, dude! I think I can talk about.
Hey, you know, I'll say something about those commercials. Back when I was coming in, back in like 2001, and joined in 2002, I got sucked into the commercials. Like, we had a dude climbing the side of a mountain and fighting a fire monster. You know, what's cooler than that? And I never got to do that. I wanted to fight some fire monster, and I got chipped out of that experience.
Yeah.
But it gave me 20 years in the Marine Corps. And experiences and memories that will never die, and friendships that will last until I die.
Oh yeah, bro.
Well, let's start with this, Peyton. What was your first unit?
Oh, my first unit, I got out to lovely 29 Palms Marine Corps Squadron 370.
MWSS. So, for those of you that don't know, MWSS is
Marine Wing Support Squadron.
Yeah, but their mission is to set up expeditionary airfields. What that ends up being in the garrison environment is that they basically maintain a beautiful, how many square footage of desert in the middle of nowhere for pilots to like land in 29 Palms if they need to refuel and then quickly get the hell out of there because 29 Palms. Is that right, Peyton?
Just a massive paradise that we all thoroughly enjoy.
Yeah. I gotta say, I would have never pegged you as a dude from Kansas. Like, when I first met you, you know, you think Peyton Garcia, okay, this dude's either from New York, California, Texas, or fucking Florida. That and I, you know, I just learned you were from Kansas. So, you know, I guess, you know, that's different. Did you grow up hunting and all that kind of stuff?
Actually, no, I kind of just grew up in a really small rural town of like 10,000 people, much to do, but to cause trouble. So just hanging out with friends, doing normal Kansas stuff. Other illicit activities as such, but I made it here, so no, I'm okay. Fun.
All right. I mean, so, you know, when we first met you, we really wanted you. I know I spoke to the monitor, like, you were pegged to go be a recruiter. That's what they, you know, you were histed, like they said, this guy's going to be a recruiter. And like, I was having conversations with your gunny, and Raider was having conversations with you, and we were all like on an email chain, like, we need to get this guy to the team. So eventually I got a hold of the monitor. I was like, look, I know this guy's fucking going. Well, I had a good relationship with the monitor, and he's like, what can I do for you? Like, how, he's like, it's been a while since we last talked. How can I help you out? I was like, all right, I know I generally don't ask for favors, but I got a guy I really want on the team. He's been histed though. And I know it's like moving mountains to try and get a guy off the hist list just to bring him over to the shooting team. But this is a guy we want. And he made it happen. But when you first got to the team, you know, an unfortunate event kind of happened and you were pegged to go work at OCS over that summer season as a fitness instructor. And that's also one of the unfortunate realities of being on the Marine Corps shooting team. When you first get there, chances are you might have to, we do have to give a tax to go help out at OCS. But how did you stay focused during that period of time when all you really wanted to do was shoot?
The way that I kind of stayed focused, first off, like getting sent out to do a task as such, it was a very physically and mentally draining thing. It was just a secondary duty to go be a physical training instructor for the candidates. So with that physical strain, it was kind of tough to really keep my goals going as a competitive shooter. And at that time, I didn't really know what my goals were, but I kind of just kept on my push. I kept on my normal pace before the team, as going to local matches, dry firing as much as I could, just kind of keep that drive alive. Cause I knew that as soon as I let that go and I kind of embraced that duty that I was on, it was going to be really hard for me to reel it back in. So I kind of just dug down deep into the roots of what I started to do initially, and just try my best to maintain momentum. As long as I could have kept that momentum going, it was going to be good. And I think I a little bit at least.
What did your dry fire cycle look like whenever you were doing that on your own? Like, how long, you know, what kind of stuff would you work on?
I'd come back from my work day, and just depending on what I had the energy for that day, I relied a lot on Ben Stoger's book. There's a dry fire procedure that he has, to where I kind of decked out my basement with a bunch of targetry and would just focus on draws one day. I focused really heavily on scoop draws. And I had a video, like a program on my, on an Oculus headset, to where I'd play this simulator, to where I'd try my best to get range time, because I didn't have enough time to go to the range. And I just really dug into that as much as I could, dry fire as much as possible. It was...
You know what? I'm glad you brought that up, because I use that same thing whenever I go through long periods where I can't get to the range now, just because I'm not on the team anymore. So like, I'll come home and I'll just put that headset on and start playing that game. And it's great. You know, it gives you that hand eye coordination. Yes, you're not using your regular gun or anything like that, but it allows you to have that hand eye coordination, with shooting a weapon, and visually seeing the impacts.
Oh, for sure. It's really fun using it a lot. And then your first time going back to the range, you're trying to shoot as quick as you do in the system. And then you're like, oh gosh, grip's a thing. It's a thing. It's very prevalent.
Yeah. One thing I try to do with that is, like, I know I'm not going to get the same grip because it's not a real pistol grip or anything like that, but at least with my support hand, I still try and point that thumb and just get that same grip with the left hand. I know it's not necessarily the exact same, but the most closely that I can mimic what I'm doing in that game to real life, it's, you know, it helps. It's another tool that you can put away.
Oh, for sure. It just, yeah, that's a pretty heavy tool that I would use.
And you know, I would say, like, even when you were at OCS, like, there were times where you're like, hey, I didn't have to come in today, or I don't have to be back until later on. And you would go out there to the ranges. And then, like, if you had a weekend, and there was a match going on locally, you would go out with the team and compete. And then you went to Microtech Pro-Am, as well. And, like, you coordinated and worked with the command at OCS and be like, hey, you know, I know I have to perform duties over here, but the team is coming out here. Can I still go shoot with the team and I'll be back on this day? And, you know, they were comparable with you. And, like, even without as much range time as everybody else, you still performed at a very high level.
I was drowning trying to keep on the surface, but yes, grateful for the OCS command for letting me go out and actually compete. I tried as much as I could to get out, and it was sometimes it was a challenge, but I learned a lot from my time on Action during the summer and being able to just come out just for a little bit, little snippets of information, whether that being how to, hey Garcia, here's how to quad load, and they show me once and I have to build a makeshift shotgun in my garage and learn how to quad load, spend it on my off time because I don't have a real gun most mm-hmm. of the time, but yeah, as much as I could, I was out of the range.
You know, kind of going in line with that, what kind of advice would you have for someone who's experiencing an institutional setback compared to where they really want to be?
Advice, keep momentum. Don't slow down. Don't lose your goals just because you have an institutional setback. It comes with the territory, unfortunately, for us as in the military. But the second that you lose your eyes, your focus on that shooting goal that you have, it's going to quickly slip through your fingers because shooting is a terrible a skill that
depreciates.
It's a skill that goes away quickly and that you have to keep sharp on. So just keep on your game, stay focused, be strong in your mental fortitude, and just really push.
I have to agree with that. Like, there's so many things out there. Like, you have to be a strong-willed person to kind of want to go for something hard, and it kind of shows a true passion, and it kind of shows the character of the individual. Like, do you really want to be here? Are you willing to take the time and what it takes? I think the common trend is, like, getting onto the team, it's not just hard and trying to make it onto the team, like, showing that you have the ability and the character, because we are very highly selective, but it also shows it's hard to get somebody to the team because the Marine Corps doesn't always want to send somebody to the team. And so it's a matter of, you know, maintaining that constant communication and not being a dick about it and just keeping your cool and just, you know, expressing and, you know, without being an annoyance. And, you know, I think the team as a whole and the individuals that are chosen, those that are there, truly show what it takes to be there. And they show that they are the best, not just in ability, but in character. Yeah.
Yeah, really, really good points. If you stick around long enough in the Marine Corps, your career will take detours. And the things that you really want to get at, like whether it's a particular duty station or a particular billet or being on the Marine Corps shooting team, some things are worth waiting for. I'd say that your wait definitely paid off, Peyton. But you just came through, you just finished your first MCMC season, right? For those of you listening that aren't familiar, MCMC stands for Marine Corps Marksmanship Competition, and it takes place all around the world. And Peyton, you traveled to Hawaii and Camp Lejeune and also Quantico this last season. So any memorable moments, any aha moments you got from traveling across the Marine Corps and teaching different Marines?
Probably the most memorable moment was when we went out to Hawaii And we were able to set up a pretty unique stage that was a brainchild of Staff Sergeant Arellano.
The bunker stage.
The bunker stage, yes, the bunker stage. Being able to utilize a bunker that is rarely used by Marines and setting up targetry along the bunker. Just you're setting up your stage plan. You get to see it once. You go through and you assault the bunker and just having targets poke out. It was a 36 round stage. Seeing Marines go through bunkers and advancing through that was super cool. Seeing the aha moments from Lance Corporals that have never seen anything like that before, all the way up to like crusty E8s who have never seen that. It was an awesome experience. And then just kind of like teaching the Marines at each individual location. I've never seen this is my first year instructing. So it's really unique seeing from the perspective of the instructor, seeing students have that aha moment, like it clicked in their mind. There's a reason to this and it works. And a really cool moment is when you instruct somebody that you've known, you've seen for a while, they have that click. And then you see them out participating in like QPS, seeing the cycle continue, seeing them preach what we have taught, and noticing that what we teach at MCMX don't just stop there. It branches out and goes out to the individual's command, the individual Marine. It goes all the way down. And that's something that as a competitor the years prior, I never realized that. And seeing that now, it's awesome. Absolutely awesome.
Yeah, getting the opportunity to directly influence so many different Marines across the Marine Corps. I know this is something that Cardenas does. You know, a lot of Marines still reach out to him. He instructed them for a couple weeks, and he still makes himself available if they want to get in competitive shooting or they want to get out to a MCMC again. So are you in touch with Marines across the Marine Corps, I'm guessing, that you've taught throughout the MCMCs?
So something that's really, really cool about this, randomly I'll get messages from people that I instructed. They'll hit me up saying, hey, I have a question about this weapon system. I have a question about how I should implement my my weapon system in this way, and being able to provide that information is really a really cool moment. Anybody who hits up or contacts me, I'm more than willing to provide as much knowledge that I have.
Well, I'll say one thing that frustrates me is like people think, oh, you're on the Marine Corps shooting team. Hey, what do you think about this specific gun right here? I don't know, dude. Like, I've never shot it. I can't tell. I know what I know about the guns that I shoot.
How is this Taurus G3?
Yeah, what I also find is that a lot of Marines tend to ask questions from a collector's point of view, but as a shooter, like I think the stereotype is that competitive shooters are very fussy, but really those of us that have been around the MCMC cycle have shot, we've run service weapons, we've run competition weapons, and at the end of the day, it's just about the shooting. It's not about whatever gizmos and doodads you're putting on there. Would you say that's a general, I mean, you're talking to a lot of Marines trying to get in competitive shooting. People tend to get wrapped around the axle in terms of gear and specifics, don't they?
They do. They have a tendency to think that the more expensive gear there is,
pouches.
Yeah, the better they're going to be. If they see a T-1000 hanger, they have to have, they can't get good draws.
No, the best thing you can do for yourself is to just go compete, and then you will eventually get to the point where you find out what gear is good for you.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very rare. Like people like you, Peyton, like you represent the Marine Corps at such a wide level, in a manner that's really like incomparable with some of your peers in the fleet, right? Like you are the face of the Marine Corps shooting team, and people all over the Marine Corps are asking you for your information as a subject matter expert, which is awesome. But let's switch over to the competition season. So you did some competitions last summer. You did a whole MCMC cycle. Somewhere along the line, you got moved from three gun over to pistol team. So going into this season, and we can talk about how you saw this competitive season going into it and how you see it now several major matches in, but what were your goals going into it and how has that possibly changed as we're in the middle of the competition season coming out of Mid-Atlantic?
My goals coming in, first and foremost, I just want to be the best. Like I want to do the best that I humanly possibly can. And to get there, I will try my best. But realistic goals was just to shoot to my my classification, maybe achieve a higher percentage, get as close to GM as I can, because I only have such a little amount of time on the teams, but for this season, I'd like to focus a lot on accuracy, slowing myself down. I have a tendency to focus heavily on speed, and that's everyone coming split skin.
You definitely, there's some stages that you run of like, he shot that like a three gunner.
Yeah, for sure. Me last weekend at Mid-Atlantic going on some ramps and shooting two on paper, definitely shows, focusing on accuracy. I need to be more accurate. It's super important as a carry optic shooter to go up for as many alphas as you possibly can. And coming from three gun to where you can hit anywhere on the piece of paper and get what you need.
Hey, it depends on the rule set.
Yeah.
We'll say yes. Yes, it does. But
all we're saying, Matt, is there's a reason the stereotype persists that three gunners can't shoot pistol. I know you're not one of them, but it is a stereotype.
It is a stereotype, yes.
Well, thank you for not keeping me in that other class.
No, you're good at pistol. So let's talk about that a little bit. You said, your movement is really good, right? I think you have a natural. Did you play sports growing up? I'm always curious.
Yes.
Okay. What'd you play?
I was a lineman, defensive line.
Oh hell yeah, man, bruising motherfuckers. But yeah. So I can tell by the way you move that you have a natural athleticism to you. But so what are you isolating in particular right now to try to get the hits to match up? Is it like some kind of mechanical fundamental? Is it vision? For me, it's always most of the time it's vision, right? Visual discipline, drawing my eye to the right part of the target. Like what are the conversations you've been having with your teammates in terms of what's the next step for you as an individual shooter?
Currently for me, my identifying factor for me to get to that point to where I need to be right now for accuracy wise is honestly mental fortitude. There's times to where I go into a stage and I immediately go, maybe this is my first summer doing USPSA. Maybe I need to slow down. Maybe I need to think about this, think about that. It all just happens at once. So I kind of get a little bit of mental fog. And then my performance kind of shows there. So trying to like build myself up mentally and just kind of focus more on hits. If I tell myself, go for alphas, slow down. Normally what will happen is I'm going for my alphas. And then my speed doesn't slow down because I'm stubborn. And then it works out for me. So just being able to like reel myself in mentally, that's a huge thing for me right now. And that's kind of a tough thing to dry fire.
Hmm. Is there a particular cue that you're baking into like your stage rehearsals that's helping you really dial in the accuracy?
Not really a cue, more so just like
a focus.
Meditating or anything like that. Just kind of like getting into my zen, getting into that headspace to where I need to be right before I get to the make ready process, not rushing myself and just like telling myself like, dude, you got this. Stop overthinking this.
Yeah. Raider would say it all the time. Confidence is key. And yeah, that guy had confidence. You could tell it, but he always shot really aggressively. So you guys have gone through, Delmarva, Area 6, and Mid-Atlantic. I might be missing a match or so. But all those matches, you guys staffed, right? You shot on staff day, and then you worked through the entire match. So I'm curious as to... are there benefits to doing that? Because you do get to see a lot of different approaches to the same stage, and you get to see, instead of just being localized to your squad, you get to watch the entirety of the match go through a particular stage. So has there been anything that you've picked up from watching shooters like, you know, Kevin Gorospy, Max Michel go through your stages that you've been working?
Oh yeah, for sure. When you're ROing a stage all day and you're seeing the walkthroughs of high-end shooters, they have a crazy method. It's all thought out, crazy efficiency, and you literally get to see the best way to run the stage all at once. Or not all at once, just go throughout the day. Like you'll start to notice like, hey, I kind of see what he was seeing. I can implement that eventually. I'm going to watch him do his stage plan and maybe learn a little something. That's kind of the biggest thing that I saw, is like seeing individuals like Nils, Max, Michelle, they all have crazy efficiency of movement, and seeing that in their stage plans, it definitely shows.
Yeah, absolutely. But with that being said, you guys are coming up on your first major match in which you're actually going to be attending as competitors and not staff. And that's Area 4, if I'm not in Texas, if I'm correct on that. So I mean, looking at the scope of a season, like there's a lot of different events, and you guys have Carry Optics Nationals, and then you're probably going to go off and shoot another national. And then you are actually going to Greece to go staff like the IPSC European match, which is freaking awesome. But is there a particular match that you're looking at as like the culminating test? Like, this is the one that I'm training towards. This is where I want to be at my peak. I mean, for me and Sam, there's kind of Dragon's Cup, and then I think our next one's going to be Nationals. So, I mean, you want to do great at every single match that you go to, but given where you're at in your training and your development, that's not always the case. So, what is it for you?
For right now, obviously, Carry Optics Nationals, being a Carry Optics shooter, but as soon as Carry Optics Nationals is done and in the books, a dot comes off, and I'm focusing super heavily with my CZ for the world shoot. I really want to do well there. I want the Europeans to be like, who's this random American who's ROing first match IPSC? Who is this guy? He's doing well. That's kind of the big match for me this year, obviously being a level four, never even thought that it'd be possible. So it's huge. Very, very, very excited for that.
Yeah, that's an awesome opportunity. I'm glad that you guys put in your application and got selected. So we'll definitely have to have you and Corson on to talk about your travels abroad and your experiences abroad. But real quick, Matt's got a question about the tactile games.
Well, I wanted to make one addition to that. When I first heard about the world shoot right before I got onto the team, I was like, why aren't we doing this? Like, I knew the team used to have an Olympic team, and that got shut down in the 90s. But I was just like, why aren't we competing in this style of competition? And it was always like my goal. That was something I always wanted to kind of focus on to get the team to that level, to where they could compete, or we could start planning for those matches. And it's just really refreshing to see that happening now. You know, I think it could have happened sooner, and we won't go into the details on why I think it didn't happen sooner. But you know, it's really cool to see the sharp turn that's been taken. And you know, I mean, you and Corson going to you know, IPSC in Europe. It's, you know, Go King and what, Muller going out to Thailand for the IPSC shotgun world shoot. It's like, holy shit, these guys are going to do stuff. And I mean, that's freaking awesome. You know, that's a once in a lifetime opportunity for guys on the shooting team. And you guys are, you know, legitimately living the dream, and you're getting to see stuff from a world stage, and you're going to be able to get different perspectives from different competitors in different countries and see how they do stuff and see if what, you know, implement some of what they do into what we do. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah. What I think is going to be extremely beneficial is us coming back from that world shoot. Now we're going to have plenty of opportunities to show the Marines and the fleet, this is what they do at a world level, at a level four. It might be a little different than what we do, but we see obviously it works. So I'm really excited to take what I learned from Greece and bringing it back to the Marines.
Well, here's another aspect too, that I thought of, because whenever I was in Romania back in 2016, and you know, I had the opportunity to go shoot like a local IPSC match. I just never got around to it just due to you know, commitments, you know, commitments, operational commitments and whatnot. But you guys are going to be able to arm the Fleet Marine Force, you know, with information on, hey, if you find yourselves in these different European countries, this is how you can go out and compete while overseas. Because, you know, we have people in Spain, we have people in Italy, you know, you know, Eastern Europe, Norway, we have people all around the globe. And for, you know, if they want to keep their competitive edge up, there are ways to get out there and compete. It just may take a little bit longer. So now you can provide them that information and talk to people in various different regions and be like, hey, how can I, you know, get you, how can I get these people out here to these matches? So that's another cool aspect.
Yes, for sure.
You stole my partner, John Bodziak. And that's all good. No hard feelings. You know, I love John to death. He's got a great ass. And I think he'd say the same about mine.
He gave you an 8, Matt, on the Tempur-Pedic scale. Don't 8.5.
Almost quarter bouncing levels, according to him. But you and him are now partnering up for the tactical games event in West Virginia. How would you say, what is your mindset going into that? What are you going to be focusing heavily on? And then what has your training and preparation for that event been so far? And I know we're months out, but, for the physical part, it does take time to prepare.
Physically, me and LT, we haven't really had the time to, we've been conflicting schedules, so we haven't trained together, but individually, I've kind of just been emulating what I've seen on Instagram. I haven't done much information gathering on tactical games, just running in kit. The notorious sandbag, seeing the 200-pound sandbag, that's a huge training for me right now, just lugging that thing around, as well as kettlebells, weighted runs. That's kind of been my regime right now. All my cardio now is with kit, which is fortunate for my joints, but I just need to focus real heavy physically. I see you guys hooking and jabbing. It looks crazy. It really does.
Well, I mean, I am 10 minutes down the road, so either I can come to you or you can come down to me. And if you guys want to do a training session during the day, let me know and I'll either be there or you guys come to me during lunch or something. And we'll just, it's easy for us to just get together and put something, half the time the sandbags are in the back of the truck because I'm usually working out with some young lieutenant and, hating myself afterward, but you know what? It's morale improvement day.
Oh yeah, for sure. I'll have to take you up on that. I need more time with the sandbag. The sandbags, like, I feel like that is the tactical games.
It is definitely one of those staple items. I would say, and there is technique involved. And as you get more exhausted, your technique tends to depreciate. Ask me how I know. Last week I was messing with the 200 and by the fourth round, I thought I was going to pull every vertebrae out of my back. And I was like, you know what? This ain't worth it. I'm just dropping it.
Nice. Yeah, going back to your roots, huh? Going back to working with you were working out with candidates over at OCS, but now you get to go work out with some lieutenants over at TBS. Yep. So it's always a good time. But it's been a good conversation, Peyton. We've covered a lot of things, and I think you're going to do great things this competitive season. But what are you looking at for the rest of your time on the team? And then what's in your future for after the team?
Well, for the rest of the time on teams, I just want to gather and distribute as much information as I possibly can. This is my time to kind of just learn as much as possible. And it's a very cool environment that I can stay here for another 2 years at least, but it's not forever. And just trying to hold on for as long as possible afterwards. Potentially going back to the fleet, potentially getting out, police department. It's really dependent on these next 2 years, really, of what my future is going to entail. And I'm just going to try to hold on for as long as I possibly can.
Yeah, that's great, man. Wish you the best of luck, Area 4. And then just for the listeners, which McMix are you slated to work at in the upcoming McMix season?
I'm slated for Far East and West, so I can get all five regions out of the way.
All right. Yeah, if you're a shooter in those regions, then you will probably see Peyton. But at this point, is there anything else that you want to leave the listeners with?
No, just keep momentum. That's it, man. That's my thing.
Yeah. Put on your Velcro belt and dry fire, you sloppy bastards.
Yeah.
But thank you. We appreciate you having me on, and I thought it was a great conversation. For our listeners, let us know how we're doing, and we hope you enjoyed this episode.